Thank you again, Mr. Elliott. I'm going to start off today's message actually with a very short video. It's one you may have seen. It got popular on the internet a few weeks back. So, Mr. Chalfant, if you go ahead and pull that up for us. So hopefully y'all could see that okay. This was in China, and after some heavy flooding, a bridge had been washed out. And what you just saw there is the person in the white SUV was not aware, and they went flying off the road. Now the good news is they were not injured, at least not seriously injured, so that's certainly very good. I thought this would be a good way to introduce today's sermon topic. And full disclosure, I actually have to give Sammy Chalfant credit for this. I'll get to that in just a second. But driving is, statistically speaking, the most dangerous thing that most of us do, at least for those 18 to about 70 years old. After you get it over 70 years old, there are health issues and things like that. But statistically speaking, driving is the second most dangerous thing in your life. The first most dangerous thing, which kind of surprised me, is poisoning. I think it's something like, I can't remember what it was, like 30-some percent, forgot to write that one down, accidental deaths occur to poisoning. I thought, wow, that seems like a lot. And I'm thinking like Agatha Christie novels and arsenic and old lace, but that's actually considered murder in a different category. Accidental poisoning includes things like drug overdoses, carbon monoxide poisoning, like from a furnace malfunctioning or something like that. But driving is the second most dangerous thing we do, accounts for 19.4% of those deaths. And after that, falls is the next most dangerous thing. That goes all the way down to 2%. This information is from www.cdc.gov, which, of course, is the Centers for Disease Control, the government website for that. But, you know, what's interesting to me about both poisoning and automotive accidents is that they have something in common. Whether it's a drug addict who thinks they can handle one more pill, or whether it's a person who's not paying attention, they fail to see the danger and their lives are over in an instant. And what they have in common is that they never see it coming. They never see it coming. Brethren, do you see it coming? Do you see what's just down the road ahead coming? Are you unaware, as the driver in the video was, totally oblivious, about ready to go off of a cliff? Today I want to talk about the future a little bit, and specifically what I want to look at is the things that lead up to the tribulation. The things that lead up to the tribulation. I want to do this in an effort to increase our awareness so that we're not caught off guard, as the driver in the video was. I've entitled this message simply, "Do You See It Coming?" And we're going to look at what to watch for before the tribulation. What to watch for before the tribulation. I told you, credit for this message goes to Sammy. I'll give you a little bit of a backstory. A few weeks ago, I was here. And I had actually seen this video. I think I saw it on the Weather Channel first, and I just, saw it in context of a random video. I thought, oh, wow, that's wild. Well, it just so happened, I was talking to Sammy, and she said, wow, did you see this video? And I said, yeah, I saw that. And she's like, this is exactly what the world is doing right now. They never know. They don't even know what's coming in the future. They don't, not even aware there's a tribulation. And I said, Sammy, you just gave me my idea for my next sermon. So full credit goes to her. But I think there's some examples that we can look at. I think there's some analogies that we could apply from learning to drive or some dangers on the road to looking at the future, and especially to seeing the tribulation coming. So when I was teaching our children to drive, one of the things that I taught them first off was ABS, right? Now today you think ABS, you think anti-lock braking system, right? Now, most of you remember years ago, right? You had, you know, if you slammed on the brakes too hard, your tires would lock up, you'd start to skid, you lose control. Well, back actually as early as the early 70s, there are a few cars that actually had it at least equipped on the rear wheels to keep that from happening. So what happens when your tires lock up, you lose control, you're more likely to hit something. Actually, you're not as effective in your stopping distance. Well, that's become perfected over the years to its standard equipment. It's done a lot of good. It's saved a lot of people's lives, and it keeps your brakes from locking up so you maintain control. That's what most people think of in terms of driving when they think of ABS, but that's not what I taught our kids. I taught ABS as something else. I taught it as an acronym that means always be scanning. Always be scanning. When you're in the car, you're driving down the road, you've got to be scanning everywhere, right? Sometimes, you know, especially as a new driver, the tendency is to look just dead ahead at the car in front of them. And that's something we should be looking at. But as you know, that's not all you look at, right? You're going down the freeway, as this person was, you need to be scanning up ahead of the road. What's that dark spot? That looks funny. Maybe I should slow down and see what's happening. You know, and this what's interesting about this video, just as the person in the white SUV didn't see it, the person with the dash cam footage, they did see it, right? They apparently were watching, were able to keep from going off that cliff. They stopped just in time. When you're driving, you know, you have to be looking down the road. If you're on a freeway, you have to be watching the person on the right of you. If you're on a busy thoroughfare, right, and maybe you're going by a bunch of restaurants and stores, is there somebody going to pull out? Are there people on the sidewalk? All sorts of things. You need to be scanning all the time. Some places are worse than others. I still maintain that when you drive in Charlotte, everybody there thinks they're a race car driver, and so it doesn't matter how fast you're going, somebody else needs to pass you. And if you happen to be getting ready to pass somebody, they don't want to let that happen, so you kind of always got to watch what they're going to do. So you always need to be scanning. And again, looking straight ahead is certainly a part of that. You do need to be aware of what's right in front of you. You can't just always be looking a half a mile down the road. You know, I've been guilty of that where I see something up there and I don't realize, oh, wait, the car in front of me is about ready to stop. And of course, you actually have to watch your six, right? You have to keep your eyes in the rearview mirror. I remember one time my wife and I were on an interstate and there was a traffic jam and we had to come to a pretty sudden stop, and then I heard it. I heard a kabunk, kabunk, kabunk. And I looked in my rearview mirror and I could see debris and stuff flying, and I could see cars dodging, and it was coming behind us. And I thought, oh no. And fortunately, there was about 2 feet between us and the car in front of us. So I just let off the brake and I scooched up as far as I possibly could to kind of try to create as much distance as I could between me and the person behind me. Sure enough, the person behind me got hit and they got moved forward about, you know, 23 inches and they just missed us. And we were able to avoid an accident. Of course, God gets the credit and glory. But the point is this. You always have to be scanning. You have to be looking everywhere all the time when you drive. You can't be distracted by your radio, your phone, all those sorts of things. In terms of learning to drive, the danger is that you could be in an accident. You could be hurt, killed, or, you know, at the very least, inconvenienced by some property damage. The precaution, at least the one we prescribed, is parents was ABS. Always be scanning. Look out for possible dangers on the road, whether it's just ahead, to the side, even behind you. So how does that apply then to watching for the tribulation? Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 24. If you got a marker in your Bible, you want to go ahead and put it there. We'll be spending quite a bit of time here today. Matthew chapter 24. This is often where we start when we begin to think about the tribulation. Matthew chapter 24, we're going to start in verse 1. Matthew 24 and verse 1. It says, Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, Jesus said to them, see you not all these things? Verily I say unto you, Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that it shall not be thrown down. And he sat upon the Mount of Olives, and disciples came to him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming, and of the end of the world? So the disciples wanted to gain some insight. Jesus Christ makes this statement, a pretty powerful statement. He drops a bomb on them, so to speak, says, hey, the temple's going to be destroyed. And it was a shock. Now, to understand this, it's kind of easy for us to understand because in our lifetime, the temple has always been destroyed except, you know, part of the mount wall there. But for them, that was the center of life. That was the center of not just religious worship, but culture. You know, it would be like today, for example, I don't know what you think of maybe as a center of culture, but just thinking as an American for a moment, if you were to stand in downtown Washington, D.C., right, and you see the Capitol building and the White House and the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument and all that, and Jesus were to say, you know, the day is coming when all this is going to be wiped out, and that probably will be, you know, it would be kind of a shock to you. You'd say, wow, that's big news. So it seems, you know, in my mind, when I read through this, I read verse 1 and 2. Between 2 and 3, I kind of think the disciples were maybe a little bit flabbergasted and thinking, wow, you know, it took them a while to soak that in. I bet Jesus kind of gave them a little time to soak it in. And in verse 3, he says, okay, I'm going to sit down. We're going to talk about this. Before going further, I do want to mention I am using the King James Version of the Bible today. I'm doing that for a couple reasons. One, I am using my companion Bible. I mentioned this a few weeks ago in terms of types of Bibles. This is kind of my go-to Bible. This has a lot of wonderful notes and appendices in it. It has something like 190 appendices in the back. Each page, the left-hand column is only about three quarters, and that's the scripture. And the rest is all notes, references, things like that. There's a lot of stuff in here. So it's very useful when it comes to doing doctrinal research. It's very useful when it comes to doing a message on prophecy. Second, it's kind of the Bible I cut my teeth on when it comes to prophecy. I got this Bible when I was about 19 years old. At the time, I was very much into studying prophecy and maybe a little bit unbalanced in that respect, but I've got a lot of marginal notes. It's kind of what I'm used to looking at when I do a prophecy sort of a study. And third, it's in the King James. And normally I read from the New King James, it's a little easier to follow and understand, but there's something about the Elizabethan English. I think that's very powerful, and especially some of these phrases that we're going to read here in terms of prophecy. So just a little programming note, I am reading from the King James Version today. That being said, continuing on in verse 4, says that Jesus answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you. They ask, What's going to happen, Jesus? What's going to be the signs? First words out of Jesus' mouth, take heed. Watch out. Don't let anybody deceive you. The word here, Greek word here is blepo, B-L-E-P-O, and it means to have the power of seeing. It says the act of looking at, even if there is nothing to be seen. Or I might add, even if there is seemingly nothing to be seen. One of my favorite pastimes at the Feast of Tabernacles, particularly when we go to some place that's, you know, on an ocean, is I like to sit out there on a balcony somewhere, maybe with a frosty cold beverage and a can of, you know, cashews or something like that. And I sit out there and I look at the ocean horizon with my binoculars. It's a habit I picked up from my dad, I guess. And I look out there, and I just want to see what's out on the horizon. Now, I don't know if there's going to be anything out there or not. You know, it could be nothing, or you might look out, depending on where you are, you might look out, and if the sun's just right and it's clear, you might look out far enough, you might actually see an oil rig. Undoubtedly, you'll see a ship, but what kind of ship is it? Is it going to be, you know, a military ship of some kind? Is it going to be a fishing trawler? Is it going to be a freighter of some kind? You don't know. So I don't know exactly what I'm looking for, but I'm just looking. It's kind of the analogy I think of here. You know, Jesus said, always be looking. You may not know exactly what you're going to see, but guess what? If you're not looking, what are you going to see? Nothing, right? Not anything at all. So he gives us this warning. Jesus Christ is giving us this principle, always be scanning, always be on the lookout for what may be out there. Now, he doesn't say anything specific here. He says, just be looking. He'll get into some other things in a little bit, and we'll get into that. But the principle here is be on the lookout. Be on the lookout. You know, make sure that you're looking, because if you don't see anything, or if you don't look, you're not going to see anything at all. Verse 5, he says, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. Now, this has always amazed me, because I thought, you know, if I'm walking down the street and somebody says, I am Jesus, I'm going to say, yeah, right, you know, I know that's not, right? But yet, Jesus Christ sees fit to warn us of this early on, doesn't he? That tells me it's a very much a reality that we can be deceived. He gives a precaution, you know, what to watch for, or first, excuse me, to watch. And then now he starts to get into what to watch for, religious deception. Religious deception, somebody who might claim to be Christ or have biblical authority in a way that they actually do not, all right? So he gives us a little bit of a warning there on the kind of things to look out. Verse 6 says, and ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See ye that ye not be troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. So here Christ gives some kind of broad general things. Now a skeptic would look at this and say, well, big deal. You know, all kinds of people have predicted stuff. You know, Nostradamus did this, right? You know, he said all these things that were going to happen. And, you know, you could look back if you wanted to in certain portions of history and say, oh, well, look how Nostradamus predicted this or whoever predicted that, all right? But think about the overall context of what Jesus Christ is saying here. Jesus Christ isn't giving us a command to be able to predict the future. Is he? Well, what did he actually command us to do? To watch, right? He didn't command that we be able to figure it out. He's not trying to give us specific insights so that we know specifically exactly what to watch for and when. He's giving us the warning to watch, and he's giving us some ideas of some things to look at. What Christ is commanding then is that we be vigilant, you know, and this is an area where a lot of people can get into trouble pretty quickly. You know, they start looking at things and they start getting to try to make specific predictions, and before too long, you can wind up going down a rabbit hole, right? And if something out there happens, doesn't fit exactly what you think is going to happen, then you disregard it, right? And now, guess what? You're in real trouble because you're so focused over here, you don't see that car pull out from the side, you know, so to speak. So here we get into the meaning here of blepo really brought out. The command is about the watching. It's not about predicting. It's that we should be watching. Now, like I said, sometimes people, you know, they don't like to hear that because they've got their own little pet prophecies that they've got in their head, all right? But we must always remember what Christ is actually commanding. Keep your finger here, or a ribbon if you do. I want to turn over to 2 Peter chapter 3. 2 Peter chapter 3. You want to pick it up in verse 10. 2 Peter 3, verse 10. It says, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. Now, the day of the Lord actually follows the tribulation, but what we're looking at here is Peter's warning about the end of this age completely. It says, the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat, and the earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. So we kind of correlate this to a new heaven and new earth, right? And that all happens well after Jesus Christ's return, after, you know, the tribulation, then Jesus Christ's return, the millennium, all of that. But Peter says, you know, considering all this, considering this earth's going away, it says, seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness? I've said it before, I'll say it again. Every sermon on prophecy I ever give is going to include the scripture. Sometimes I give it at the end of the sermon, sometimes I give it at the beginning. Today I'm giving in the middle. But it's a reminder, you know, prophecy is given and it's helpful and it's useful, but why is it given? Is there going to be a quiz on Judgment Day and say, okay, Dan, let's see how many predictions you got right? Or is it going to be, what kind of person were you? Were you a person that watched? Were you a person that kept your eyes to the horizon, that looked out for things, that did so in a way that was maybe helpful to others? You know, if I predict that so-and-so is going to be the beast, is that really going to be helpful to anyone? As much as, say, if I share with somebody, you know, hey, you need to be on the watch and the lookout for a power is going to rise, it's going to have dominion over humanity before Christ's return. I mean, what's really more helpful there? So we're given this reminder here. Verse 12. Oops, I turned away too quickly there. Stayed in 2 Peter. 2 Peter 3. Get back there myself. Challenges of using this older Bible is the pages are very dog-eared, not quite as crisp, a little bit harder to get to quickly. 2 Peter 3 here, still in verse 12. He says, looking for and hastening unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat. You know, there's this admonition. It says, looking for, watching, you know, looking for that day to come. Now, the word here is a little bit different. The word here is prodoko, prosdokao. It's prosdokao. And it means watch for anything and thus wait or look for. That's a different word, but it's still pointing to that principle. ABS, always be scanning. Always be on the lookout for things that lie just ahead. Are we watching? Are we scanning? Are we looking at the horizon to see what's just down the road? I'm going to pull up another photo here. Mr. Chalfon, if you can pull up our next photo. Sorry, I didn't give him quite the warning I should have there. So just kind of refreshing our memory here. Just thinking about the looking, that physical act of looking ahead. You know, I think everybody recognizes and realizes at some point in time they should have been looking ahead, right? At this point in time, when all four wheels are off the ground in the air, your brakes aren't doing you much good. Is now the time to be looking ahead? No, right? It's too late. It becomes obvious at a certain point in time. If you go ahead and play then the next video here. Okay. See, here is when you need to be looking ahead, right? When you can still do something about it. When you're midair, a half second from hitting that embankment, it's a little bit too late. And again, fortunately, the folks here, they were not seriously injured there. But I think it's plain to see, as you read through Matthew 24, why Christ constantly interjects, watch. Be aware. He gives parables. He gives the parable of the fig tree later on. The danger, of course, is that we might be deceived and we not see the tribulation coming. Prescription that Jesus Christ prescribed and that Peter reinforced is to watch or always be scanning. Look out for world events, political, financial trends. Be aware. Don't just, you know, go through life oblivious to the things. Don't go down the road of life oblivious to what is ahead. Be on the lookout. Have your ears open for ideas and ideals that are being taught to our children in school, and we could probably spend the rest of the day talking about this, things that are being taught to our children in school that lead them away from God, away from what the Bible teaches, not just taught in school, things that are being enforced in the workplace. We need to be on the watch for such things and making sure that we're not lulled asleep and thinking, well, okay, this is bad, but at least it's not as bad as. No, you know, when it goes away from God, it goes away from God. And we saw that in the video, the magnified video about the Sabbath day, how quickly people start to get lulled away. So the first way in which we can be watching for the tribulation to see when it's coming, as it's coming, is to always be scanning or be watching. I'd like to go ahead now with another video. This is kind of going to step back to the analogy or the lessons that we try to teach our children when they were learning to drive. If you want to go ahead and play the next video here, Mr. Chalfont. That is the one where the crossing of the street.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Okay. I had to make some last minute changes to the video because some of them were copyrighted and one of them illustrated the point, but it was a little grisly to watch. So found one that I think illustrates the point and is, well, you'll see. I don't want to spoil it here. I don't know if you can see. I think if it backs up, it zooms in a little bit here. Yeah. So notice there's a caution sign on the side of the road, flashing lights and everything. There's a crosswalk. This is in an area that looks like townhomes. The person in the black SUV just flew right through it. Interesting correlation on this story, so no one was harmed, thankfully. It was a teenager learning how to drive, and a dad was in the car with them, but the kid just missed it. Didn't see that. This sort of goes a step beyond always be scanning, right? We should be looking for things in general, but sometimes there are things that we see that should really pique our attention. If you're driving through a crowded area and you see a crosswalk, right? You see a flashing sign, you see a bus. Okay, I need to really be watching over here. Yeah, I need to be looking ahead. I need to be looking to the left and right. I need to look behind me. But you know, if there's a bus stop, there's a bunch of kids at it, guess what? I'm really gonna be watching. On the drive down here today, there's a broken down vehicle on the right-hand shoulder of the road. You know, I was watching ahead of me, but as I got closer there and I saw the people by the car, I was really watching that to make sure nobody's going to dart out in the street. When you are driving home, maybe through the country, late at night, what do you look for? Deer, right? Always scanning the ditches. I cannot tell you how many deer I've come so close to hitting. It becomes really close. I think we have that other video. Yeah, so if there's another video here, kind of gave it away. But, whoop. It's actually a police car, I believe, that they jumped out in front of. That's a nice buck, too. Yeah, you know, we've probably all had those close encounters, haven't we? You know, so we know as experienced drivers. Yeah, if I'm driving through the country at night, especially in the fall, you know, when mating season is and all that kind of stuff, I'm really going to be on the lookout for deer. All right. In these scenarios, you're always scanning for danger, but now you know there's something specific to be watching for. There's a few things that you're really going to keep an eye out on. So the danger is that something that might ordinarily be harmless can be harmful. You know, if you're driving through the country in the middle of the day, no problem, right? If you're driving, say, through a subdivision, and I can't think of a great analogy when you wouldn't have to watch for people, but you know, say, for example, 8 o'clock when the school buses are running versus maybe 10 a.m. when the buses have already gone, you know, there's more danger. So you're going to be looking for some specific things. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24. Before we get too deep, kind of broadly speaking, I'll talk a little bit about what we see in Matthew 24. What we see here in Matthew 24 is we see events that lead up to the tribulation. We see events that are in the tribulation. And then we see some things that happen after the tribulation, the actual return of Jesus Christ himself. That's generally what's going on, and this is, of course, known as the Olivet Prophecy. Jesus Christ was here at the Mount of Olives when he gave this prophecy. And there's a temptation to try to stick things in a specific hard and fast time order. And in some places we can do that, some places we can't do that. We've got a pretty good outline here. I am not going to go through everything that's going to go on during the tribulation. Likewise, I'm not going to go into things that happen at the return of Christ. We're going to do that in a lot more detail once we get into the booklet discussion on the book of Revelation Unveiled. One last shameless reminder, please order the booklet if you don't have it already. What I want to focus on is the events that lead up to the tribulation. I'm not going to talk a lot about the beast power per se today. No doubt it'll be on the scene. We'll be able to see it developing as the tribulation comes. Certainly probably be able to identify it, but we're going to really focus on that later on, because one of the beast powers claimed to fame is that they're going to be able to solve all these problems that are going on, right? And that's when they're really going to come into their power. Not going to talk about heavenly signs and things like that that immediately precede the return of Jesus Christ. We're not going to get into all the plagues that are poured out there on the day of the Lord, the battle of Armageddon, anything like that. What I really want to focus on is what we are looking at now before the tribulation actually begins. So with that being said, I do want to get into some specifics as much as we can. We've already covered here in Matthew 24 the idea, the topic of being deceived. Now let's look at why it is we don't want to be deceived. I'm going to reread the section of Scripture, Matthew 24, verse 5. He says, "For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many." So again, there's a warning about religious deception. It says, ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. And all these are the beginning of sorrows. As I mentioned before, skeptics would point to this and say, well, that's a pretty broad stuff, right? I could probably look at any time in history and say, well, look, you could fit this into, you know, this time or that time or something like that. But what it seems to point to is that sort of all these things will be going on at once. You know, hindsight is always 20/20, right? But comparatively speaking, if you think about, say, the late 1930s through the mid-40s, what was going on? It was World War II, right? And it was a world war. And everybody was focused on that. After that, in the 1950s, well, there was the Korean War, and there were problems that existed in our world as a whole, but it, relatively speaking, it was a much more peaceful time. It wasn't the utopia some people try to paint it as, because, again, there were still issues going on, racial inequality. There was the Korean War. There's also sort of disparity, people still starving to death over in China, things like that. But relatively speaking, compared to the time when the whole world was at war, it was a little more peaceful time. But Jesus says, you know, there's going to be a lot of things going on. There's going to be a lot of issues, and they're going to be widespread. Christ gives us some specific things, those who represent false religion. This is something that, of course, we think about a lot in the church, as we should. We don't want to be deceived. That goes back to Christ's warning, the first where he started out. He said, don't be deceived. We think, okay, yeah, we get it. But, you know, if you flip over here, verse 24 says, Jesus Christ still speaking, he says, "For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall shew great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before." You know, it says the very elect. What do you consider yourself? What's the difference between elect, very elect? Well, you know, I like to think I know a little bit more than the average bear, but I also don't want to go so far as think, oh, yes, I'm so elect, right? Christ says, listen, if it's possible, even the very elect could be deceived. And he said, I already told you about this. You know, I've told you before. He doesn't stop repeating himself why this is so important. Consequently, you know, we must be ever vigilant. You know, hate to always go back to this example, but it's so relevant for so many of us. 28 years ago, we went through a great apostasy. Most of us did. You know, we saw a time when the truths that the Bible teaches and that we know are true were just thrown out the window and said, that doesn't matter anymore. How many people in your own mind that you considered elect or even very elect were deceived at that time? Happened before. Can it happen again? Yeah, you bet. That's why Jesus Christ is so emphatic about this. He goes on to talk about wars and rumors of wars. You know, this has certainly a hot topic, certainly with the things going on with Russia in the Ukraine right now. That's certainly a rattling saber. North Korea constantly, China and Taiwan. It's all out there. And then there's the silent wars, right? There's the drug cartel wars, the things that aren't official countries that are fighting each other. But let me tell you, there's plenty of bloodshed there to qualify it as a war. There's all these things going on. We get very accustomed to it because we hear it in the news and we flip just right by it, or it goes in one ear and out the other. And we need to not do that. Now, I don't say this to try to preach gloom and doom or bring anybody down, but we can't just ignore these things. We can't just pretend that they don't have impact, because they are specifically things that Jesus Christ did tell us to watch for. We get into famines and pestilences. You know, again, we think about this sometimes as, well, that's what happens over in other parts of the world. We hear about, you know, all the starvation that goes on, say, in Africa or in India or someplace. And that's something that happens in a faraway place. But what was COVID? Barnes Notes on the Bible defines a pestilence as raging epidemic diseases, and cites the plague as sweeping off multitudes of people at once. All right? We think of locust descending or something like that, and certainly that would qualify. But, you know, an epidemic disease that starts changing how you live life. I think COVID fits that bill pretty well, doesn't it? And I don't think any of us is ignorant enough to think that, you know, COVID or those kinds of things is gone forever and it's never going to come back. Maybe it's not COVID. Maybe it's something else. Who knows? But I think we're aware that these things are going to happen and continue to happen. Similarly, earthquakes, interestingly enough, according to Barnes Notes, may not just mean earthquakes. Certainly think it will include physical earthquakes. But Barnes Notes says earthquakes. Says in prophetic language, earthquakes sometimes mean political commotions. Things that shake your world, right? I think this will almost certainly include what we're going to see as the dominance and rise of the beast power. We're going to see some political worlds shaken over in Europe as that starts to come together. When you see these 10 regions start to unite, political wrangling for, you know, the dominant leader, not to mention the religious aspect, those that will support him. Again, I don't want to get too far off the tangent and get away from things to look for before the tribulation. But what all this seems to point to, the famines, the pestilence, the earthquakes, what these seems to point to are visible and identifiable things, things that are much more easily identified, say then, by comparison, religious deception. Well, it's a little harder to identify religious deception. Most people have not been able to over the course of history. It's a lot easier to identify an epidemic. The whole world knew what COVID was. Pull up our next image here, Mr. Chalfont, if you would. How long before this kind of sign began to rule our world? All right. I'm not here saying that the mask, you know, was the sign of the beast. That's, you know, some people thought that, or that the vaccine was, or anything like that. I'm not, you know, commenting on those things specifically, but this became a earthquake, so to speak, in our world, didn't it? And we had all kinds of division. You in Columbia here probably remember this very well. At one point in time, we had people from three different states coming here for Sabbath services each week, and everybody lived under a different set of rules. Those of us in North Carolina, masks were absolutely mandatory. Those of you in South Carolina, masks were not mandatory, but the law was written so that local towns, counties could make them mandatory, and it was actually here. Those in Georgia, masks weren't mandatory, plus the governor wrote a law that said cities, towns, counties can't make them mandatory. Well, now you've got brethren from three states coming together for, well, what do we do? Well, we went by the laws that were here, local to us. But, you know, how long did it take for masks and vaccines to become political? 2-3 seconds, maybe? Not long. It became a lot of upheaval. What happens when it gets to be a little more inconvenient than putting on a mask? What happens when they say you can't leave your house on Saturday? Again, I'm not trying to be too doomsday here, but I think we have to be cognizant of the kind of things that can happen very quickly. Jesus is pointing to physical things that might happen. Christ said, be watching for these things. In verse 8, he said, all these things are the beginning of sorrows. It's just the beginning. It's just getting warmed up. The real trouble still lies yet ahead. So how good are we at watching for things? How good are we at watching for things? Some of you I know do very well. You watch the news, you read regularly. Some of you come up to me and inform me of things, well, I hadn't heard about that or whatever. Some of us, you know, we get distracted easily. We, you know, sit down on the internet and maybe we have all the best intention watching news and then, you know, 10 minutes later we're watching funny cat videos and we're off to the races and that kind of occupies our day or life or work, other things get in the way. And of course we have to pay attention to life, work, you know, raising our families, but we can't just let everything else go. We need to be making sure we're spending some time, maybe, you know, a half hour a day, maybe what? Maybe you watch the evening news. That was a ritual at my house when we were a kid. Everybody sat down at the dinner table. We ate dinner at 6 o'clock, 6:30, we watched the evening news. And, you know, that's just the way it was in our life. And I think, you know, we've probably gotten away from that a little bit. Part of that is because the information is available readily elsewhere. I've mentioned before, you know, I often go in the morning. One of the things I do early on in the day is I go on to it used to be Twitter. I guess now it's called X, right? And I look at, I have a list of all the news agencies, and it's just a list that I look at, and it's got BBC and Reuters and ABC and CNN, and it just gives me the headlines, right? But it gives me an idea of what's going on in the world. And I know, you know, news agencies, they can bias things whichever way they want, right? And that's true. But, you know, if you have a good broad variety there, at least you'll have an idea of some of the things that are actually happening in our world. If you hear a headline or see a headline that goes along the lines of saying, you know, there's a hurricane in Southern California, and of course there was, you might say, well, that's a little unusual. What was it that Jesus said about these things in diverse places? Kind of ticks a little box. Where Yevgeny Prigozhin, leader of the freelance Russian soldiers, a mercenary group that broke off, earlier this week, a video that they produced. He was talking about making Africa more free, right? He kind of broke off as a Russian separatist and starting his own thing. And so we look, well, what does that mean, that this guy is doing that? And by the way, just to show you how quickly things changed, I wrote that in my notes, I think, on Thursday. Friday morning, he died. He was in a plane crash that some are calling an assassination. Very quickly, things change. Or when you hear that Senator Tim Scott is running for president, do you say, who on earth is that? Or do you know who it is? How many know who Tim Scott is? Okay, so for those of us in South Carolina, he's a state senator from South Carolina, and he's running for president. You know, something all of a sudden that's a world event, or at least nationwide event, is now in our backyard. You know, is a local senator running for president. Some of these things may have no impact on our future whatsoever. But then again, they just might. And we're not going to know if we don't watch. These are the kinds of things that Jesus Christ warns us to watch for. I want to go ahead and stop there today. I actually had quite a bit more material prepared, in all honesty, but I'm only about halfway through. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to stop there for today, and we'll finish this up next time. Next time in part two, we'll get into some more of the specifics that Jesus Christ warns us about. We'll talk specifically about the abomination of desolation. But for today, remember what Jesus Christ said. He said, watch. He didn't say you have to be able to predict the future perfectly. He said to watch. My term, always be scanning. Not just what's in front of you. Look what's happened in the past. Is there anything we can learn about from our history? What's happening over here that doesn't jump out in front of me, but may all of a sudden, boom, be right there? If we do this, we won't be deceived. If we adhere to Jesus Christ's warning, you will see the tribulation coming.